This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
As the Russ turns, you came up with a different tease for it. Because I was coming up with phrases, let Russ fuss, let Russ cuss, though he doesn't really cuss all that much. Let Russ vent was a suggestion that I saw on Twitter. Let Russ stew were all possibilities.
I just wanted to use an excuse to play the theme song to The Young and the Restless, the soap opera that my mother used to watch a whole lot. At least it was on in the background on the occasional summer day where I was home, and I called it The Dumb and the Restless.
Well, the Seahawks would be dumb if they end up restless, I think, at the end of this. But let's bring in Brock Heward now for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right!
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Morning, Brock. How are you now?
Good morning, Paul. I'm doing well. Still stuffed. We took our adult to dinner last night. Our oldest, ooh, Haley, turned 18 yesterday.
Wow.
So we did a nice dinner and ate too much and paid for it.
You eat? Red meat?
Lots of it.
Always worth it. I always think it's worth the indigestion.
Well, you know what's funny is I just saw Haley as I walked down here, and she's doing a little online school. Her basketball team is quarantining and doing online school during their little playoff push here. And so I said, how's your stomach this morning? She's like, oh, I'm okay. And I was like, oh, gosh, I just ate too much.
She said, old man.
She said exactly what you just said, Paul.
Old
she
man.
Said, was it worth it? And it absolutely was.
Always is. Always is. Just get yourself some Pepto-Bismol after the fact, and it'll make things a whole lot better. I always have to have Tums if I ever have key lime pie. Always think it's worth it along the way.
You think that's what John and Pete are doing? You think they're just chomping on Tums right now? Think they're just done with this as the rest turns?
Somebody was telling me this. I don't know how John's handling it. Like, this might be upsetting to John. Do you think Pete's, like, waking up like, oh, what are we going to do? He's like, dude, I coached Marshawn Lynch for 4 seasons. I brought him back after he flipped us off.
Yep.
Earl Thomas. Remember when Earl Thomas said he wouldn't practice if he had a headache? He played the next week.
You're forgetting one, Danny. That would be one. Richard Sherman
threatened to pull Jim Moore's press credential.
Yes. Yes.
Did you think he's like, oh, Russ hasn't even said he wants to play somewhere else? Like, yes. Oh, God, this is cute. That's cute, Russ. We appreciate it. We love how much you care, Russ.
Question one for you, Brock. This comes in the wake of a tweet from Michael Robinson where he said, how does Russell Wilson walk back into a locker room where he is saying the O-line stinks and he has no weapons? The Seahawks brass has literally given the team to Russ and he has been paid twice. What else does he want? So question one, should Russ be concerned that a guy, Mike Robb, that we remember as a Team Russ guy, isn't standing by him?
Well, the hard one, the weaponry, I've not really heard that. Is that, did I miss something over the weekend? Did he?
No.
He has advocated for Antonio Brown, and I think maybe that's what it's referring to.
Yeah.
Referring to.
Yeah, I don't think the weaponry and DK Metcalf and Tyler and those guys in any way feel slighted. If anything, I think some of those guys and the skill position guys are like, yeah, Russ, good. Yeah, let's block it up and throw it a little bit more. At least that's been my experience with players, especially at the wide receiver positions. I don't think that weaponry is really a big deal. We've had this conversation about the O-line, though, and I will be very curious if and when we hear from Dwayne Brown. That continues to be the guy that I point to, that I think Ray Roberts spoke about, and Ray hit on how those O-linemen feel, you know, about some of those comments, how he would feel if he were in that locker room. And, yeah, there's going to be an airing of grievances. There's going to be some conversation. But, you know, how many of those O-line pieces are also going to be on this roster in 2021? Is Ethan Posick going to be here? I know the rookie Damian Lewis will be here. Brandon Shell going to be here. Mikey Potty retired. So, you know, there's always moving pieces anyway, but the big one, and I think this, the cornerstone conversation, will be Duane Brown. And if and when he speaks about it, if and when he has spoken to Russell privately already about it, if they are on the same page, how all of that will sort itself out, I think he's the linchpin and probably the key conversation in all of that.
I don't want to see them change the offensive line this offseason, Brock. I want them to bring back Ethan Posick. I want them to keep Brandon Shell right where he is at right tackle, Damian Lewis at right guard, bring in a left guard, whether it's in the draft or finding somebody that's there. I think one of the, and this will be, if people think the answer is going out and signing a high-level free agent, they might be missing the point that the point, there's some value in retaining continuity.
Yes.
And that as much as everybody celebrated, oh, James Carpenter's gone finally, that dude's still in the league. Yep. And Seattle, while they decided it wasn't worth paying him, your line might be better if you kept some guys together, that they're not paying that premium for the continuity, and that that as much as, hey, go out and sign Jack Conklin or something like that, keep the guys together. Pay, yeah. Even if you think, eh, we might be able to do better. Well, you know what? Having the guy there that they all know each other, that might also create a positive impact as well.
Yeah, Max Unger started for how many years after he left here, and Carpenter started for how many years after he left here, and still started last year for Atlanta. But as he kind of cleaned his body up and trimmed his weight, who was the right guard they drafted that got cut and has been a starter in Indianapolis and even got paid?
Glowinski.
There you go, Glowinski. So yeah, I think there's a lot of validity to that, to having continuity, to having guys on the same page, to believe in one another as they line up next to each other instead of the revolving door that it's largely been.
Can I tell my favorite Mark Glowinski story? I
sure.
loved Mark Glowinski, if only because of this. He's a rookie. When he came from West Virginia, he was a JUCO player before that.
Yep.
All the rookies have to carry helmets around. Like, you've all seen that after practices. The guy's carrying five helmets because he has to carry the vet's helmets. And Michael Bennett starts making fun of Mark Glowinski in the hallway. And Glowinski's got like five helmets. And he just drops his helmets and turns, all right, let's go. Michael Bennett was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Yes. As soon as I heard that story, I was like, keep that guy.
Yeah.
That's the guy you want. Just a head knocker.
Just not a fit for Tom Cable at that time. Not a fit
for him. Was.
How he wanted, how
he wanted his science projects.
Yep.
Question two. Anytime Tom Cable's name gets mentioned, I feel like a trash can should get kicked somewhere. Just like, oh, so angry. It's ridiculous that happens. Brock, Carlos Dunlap is a really important member of the Seahawks. His current contract is $14 million against the salary cap. It's too high. He's not going to make that next year. But Seattle wants him longer term. Now there's talk that they might end up having to cut him and then hope to bring him back. What's your take on this this contract situation?
That's probably what you're going to have to do. As challenging as that's going to be, and then what is the market out there willing to pay? The guy bet on himself, and I can't hate on Carlos Dunlap in this situation at all. He got traded for, he moved money around, said, fine, I'll do that. I will bet on myself, and I'm going to be productive, and he was incredibly productive. And when you're that productive, you set yourself up and you put yourself in a situation where unless Seattle's going to blow him out of the water, which they don't normally do with guys of his age. Danny, you've said this before, they've got a number that they feel pretty good about. I'm sure they've had those preliminary conversations with his agent. This is kind of where we're willing to go. And if the market just explodes, then we can't do that. We've got Jamal Adams, and we've got a corner, and we may have an O-lineman, and we've got other, and we have a running back. We got a lot of other pieces that we've got to address. And I kind of share the same disdain for one of you that just went by cutting him and letting him test the market. But to me, if I were to guess and guesstimate, and what's the crystal ball say, I think that's where this is going to go.
My concern is that if you release him, that he sees another team as closer to a championship and takes a discount there. Because I do think that part of Dunlap's career is here, where he wants to have a chance to win after being stuck in Cincinnati for such a long period of time. Is there going to be somebody else out there that can sell that they can win better than Dunlap? And I would imagine there's going to be at the very least one team that's competitive with Seattle on that front.
Yeah, probably one team. They also went 12-4. He also had the ride of his life. He also went to the playoffs. He also got to play with Russell and knows his capability. And And has probably got his ear to all of these rumors and all of this noise that Russell is making, which may be more detrimental, Paul, than another team out there. That if Dunlap's like, dang, why is Russell not happy here? Why is Russell not like this? Why is Russell, you know, seeing these issues? I thought this place was pretty sweet. I kind of enjoyed the ride. But, you know, I think all signs point to the market is going to get an opportunity to tell Carlos Dunlap what the market thinks he's worth.
Question three, Brock. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk has been either carrying the water.
I do not like Mike Florio.
Of Mark Rogers. He's been carrying that water, or he's just been approaching this offseason and all these rumors with the zest of an amateur Zodiac killer inspector. And he said this about the way that things are going in Seattle right now. A headline: with no owner involvement, Pete Carroll is calling the shots in Seattle. Some in league circles believe the Seahawks have essentially become a corporation with Vulcan Incorporated and not Jody Allen running the team. He continues saying, by all appearances, Vulcan isn't actively running the team. Instead, it appears Vulcan Sports and Entertainment defer to Pete Carroll as the de facto CEO of the Seahawks subunit, since he is coach and VP of football operations, Florio surmises, with no tinfoil hat that I am aware of. It confirms he is the ultimate football authority with the Seahawks, a team that has no direct or indirect ownership meddling of any kind. Is Florio, Brock, correct in that the Seahawks are a corporation now led by Pete Carroll?
Well, I think there is at least, I hear Danny cackling in the background, I think there is at least a fair question to say, who does Pete report to? I think that is a fair question. I don't know if you guys saw Dan Orlovsky's comments this morning on Get Up, but he said, hey, listen, if this is about too much power for Pete and Pete is, you know, everything that Mike Florio says he is, or it's about Russell and his legacy and Russell wants out, if it's the former, then you fire Pete to keep Russell happy, which
yeah,
I think is...
Yeah, man. See, that's nuts.
And I think that's a bit crazy.
Here's the thing. That's the question of whether Pete has too much power or how that works. That's something for somebody other than a player to discuss.
Yes.
Like, if a player is thinking that they're an equal partner in this and like, hey, we need some intervention here. What I look at that and say is like, okay, if you listen to that guy and then depose the coach to make him happy, you're going to have a lunatic running your team.
Yep.
Because that's the sort of stuff that I get Russ wanting to improve his football situation. The idea that it would be a good business practice to have him as a check to the coach and the ownership's power is insane.
Yeah, it's not going to work. Never going to work.
And so all of this discussion about it, though, is coming from that camp. Like, that's why we're talking about it now, is because Russell and his agent are unhappy with that. And that's where I'm like, okay, you guys want to have that conversation, you go have your Looney Tunes conversation about how all of the different Game of Thrones work in the NFL, because you're living in La La Land.
Yeah, I think a Seahawk fan, Danny, they're pretty smart fans. I think understand all of that by now, a month into this, you know, where a lot of this is being stirred up. And in some ways, I point to, or would like to point to, and say, okay, then what is healthy in this? And what is a healthy solution? Or what is a healthy question to ask? And I think it is fair to ask and say, man, when Paul Allen was running the show, Paul was in charge. Paul made John Schneider write reports of every single play of every single game in depth of what really went on and what was the challenge with it. He held and kept Pete accountable and challenged Pete and brought in people from the outside that sometimes I think were uncomfortable to Pete Carroll, right? Coaches that had been fired, others from outside the league, just some checks and balances to say, hey, you know, compete every day. Everybody's going to compete in this building. And Paul was a pretty curious guy, a pretty remarkable guy in that way, and very demanding of John and Pete. I think it is within at least reason, Danny, to ask the question, who is doing that now? Where are those checks and balances now? Or do you feel like, hey, man, that's not for anybody to ask, and Pete's got enough equity and a dozen years here, and Pete's in a position where he doesn't need that anymore?
Well, are you asking that from the sense
I'm curious. Yeah, I'm not asking the sense of Russell. I'm asking the sense of a Seahawk fan that says, hey, man, the beauty of that ownership group with Paul and then with Pete and John running it. And, you know, Paul was more active, more curious, more demanding than I think many people thought he was. Where is that now?
That part is true when it comes to the GM. I think it's less true when it comes to the coach. And Paul Allen has been a great owner, but he's never, his franchises have never been known for a lack of drama or a lack of, I mean, constantly there have been weird power struggles that have happened within them, both the Blazers and the Seahawks at different points. So I feel like we have, looking back, glamorized Paul's ownership of like, oh, this would have never happened if Paul were still alive. And I don't think that's accurate. I think Paul did actually tolerate a lot of friction and a lot of different jockeying and feels that that created things. Is it best run right now with Pete being? I don't know enough of how Pete reporting up works. I honestly don't. And I'm just, that's not what a reporter should say, because I should say, well, here's how, I don't know how Jody Allen, and if he is truly without a check, but I don't trust who we're hearing this from to think that that's actually the case. I don't trust the quarterback who's mad with this and who has always seen himself and his agent who's empowering it as a partner in this to be a reliable narrator for the inner workings of Seattle's franchise.
I think that's fair. You were going to say what, Paul?
I mean, would you even want non-football people that would be holding them accountable either? And I just look at other organizations where it does seem like the ownership actually holds people accountable, and I just can't help but think about the Dallas Cowboys and other situations. I mean, and you guys would know better about the, you know, how Paul Allen and how, as far as how he ran things. It sounds like, from at least what I've read, that there was a curiosity and questions that were asked, but never any mandates that were sent down from up above.
No, yeah. Brock's totally right. He would challenge guys, and he would, he absolutely would. I always thought he was more interested in the GM side of things than he was in the coach side of things, but that's just my perception. Brock, it's always great to talk to you. I hope you digest the red meat.
Yes, there's not going to be a lot of eating. The last time I did this and ate at the level that I did was, do you know Andy Staples at all? Andy Staples?
Yeah, yeah. Sports Illustrated, right?
Yeah, Andy Staples fancies himself an eater. He's an eater, big boy.
Like a competitive eater?
Yeah, like he's not going to sit down to a meal with anybody and be out eating. And we were at Tessitore's place. I think Stuart Mandel was there, Staples, some of the ESPN management. It was a fun night, you know, just kind of a collaboration of lots of ideas and football. And we start eating, and Staples kind of looks at me, and I looked at him, and I was like, nope, you're not gonna take me down.
Oh, you out-ate him.
I out-ate him, and it finished with this like molasses glazed beef rib where like he couldn't do it. He just tapped out, and I finished it. And and to this day, if you see Andy Staples and you mention my name, that's the first thing that's going to come up. But I went back to the hotel, did not move, laid on the hotel bed for I don't know 15 hours. I could not move. It was just gluttony, and not quite at that level this morning, but there's not going to be a lot of calories consumed today by yours truly.
Brock, the one thing I'll say to you is sometimes you got to play hurt.
Yes.
Sometimes you got to play hurt. Yep. You get out there and get him, Tiger.
Okay. Y'all have a great day.
That is Brock Heward for Blue 42, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. What do you think of from what Brock said there? Because I think Brock and I come from different perspectives on this. I think you listen to it. Brock has a question and wonders what is the check on your coach here and if he has too much power. I think that that is being made into an issue by someone who I don't want that person having a side. I don't trust the information about any potential flaws in this from the side I'm coming. But it's a valid question. How much control should your coach have?
It is a good question. I'd say, though, when it comes down to the way that things are here, It's not as if this is a unique situation, and I feel like it has been characterized somewhat as that because apparently Russell Wilson is so unhappy. And I'd point to a couple of other situations right now where it does feel like there are guys who are perhaps unchallenged. I'd point to Bill Belichick in New England, and we'll see how that works in a post-Tom Brady world. The first year did not work out so well, but there were some opt-outs. But I'd also point at John Gruden in Las Vegas, and I don't think that there's anyone that holds him accountable there. I don't think Mark Davis does. I certainly don't think that Mike Mayock does. I mean, that is his pirate ship, if you will, and maybe he does need a little bit of accountability there, given the way that things have gone the first three seasons.
There's also John Schneider here. I think people undersell the influence that John Schneider has because they assume that because of Seattle's unique organizational structure, that it's Pete that's making all of the calls. And that's not how it goes. there's really Pete Carroll is not a tyrant. He's not. And there have been guys who have asserted way more control than Pete Carroll has. I don't think Pete Carroll exercises the kind of unilateral decision making that people, I don't think that's accurate. That question of how an owner holds a coach accountable, though, that is the thing that's lurking in the back. And I guess as we talk about this, most people have, and I believe you're in the same group I'm in, Paul. I think most of us, from the objective perspective, think that these two sides are better off staying together. I think if Russ leaves, yeah, he won't enjoy the success that he's had here. And I think if Russ leaves, the Seahawks will suffer for it as well. So we're rooting for like sort of the continuation of the relationship, and we're glossing over that question of who do you think is more right? And we're glossing over it, like who is the problem here that Russ has spoken up, or maybe instead of who's more right, who's in the wrong here? Is it Pete and by extension the rest of the franchise in the way that they've built the offense and the struggles that they've had along the offensive line? Or is it Russ who's in the wrong because he's pointing a finger over a team that has been overall successful and the setbacks that they've had? Like, yeah, it's not been ideal for anybody, but it's not like they've been the Houston Texans.
Either way you frame that, it turns it into black and white.
Yes.
And that is also counterproductive to what we are looking for.
No, that's why I want to do this. Because it doesn't, our opinions of it doesn't matter. Because it is counterproductive, because we don't want to say who's wrong. I think Russ is wrong. I think Russ has every right to say what he's saying, and I don't believe like he's there's some sort of... Hmm. But I think empirically, I think Russ's view of this is off. I think Russ is feeling that he's been hamstrung by a coach who doesn't appreciate him. I don't think that's reality. I think that is someone who is speaking out because he feels a little vulnerable because they haven't gotten back to the Super Bowl, whether it's embarrassed or all of these. I think he's pointing fingers because of that. I don't think he's right. I think I'm not saying that, hey, he shouldn't feel that way or he shouldn't say it. I really don't. But I don't think he is objectively right.
Interesting
in this situation.
You frame it that way. I do think he has some cases to make. I'm just annoyed by him. You know, that's my whole take on it. And I suppose that maybe I think he is wrong, even though he is right. The offensive line thing, it's fair to bring it up. It's the timing of everything that he has done. I just don't understand any of it. It's a strange time. After the year where the offensive line actually makes progress, oh, goodness, it's terrible. Well, say this last year, you know? And that part of it is just the bizarre element of this entire back and forth between these two sides. As far as who's more right, what is the Seahawks side of this?
I mean, Seahawks side of this is, look, we have retooled this team from a defensive first, having a power running game, to building it around this quarterback. And we've reloaded the roster without ever having a losing record and going and getting the top 10 draft choices that come along with that. We have made aggressive trades to bring veterans in here that we think will put us over the top. We have paid this quarterback on par and made him the highest paid quarterback when he came up. We have done everything we can to value. And you know what? We haven't had a losing season in his 9 years here.
And that's a lot more than Russ can bring to the table. So if we're talking about who's more right, then I mean, I think you just answered that. And I know how we feel. We're both on the same side on this. And
we're rooting for the continuation. But when it comes down to it, you're like, who do I think is objectively, according to the facts, has their view of the situation is most accurate? I think it's the Seahawks. I don't think it's Russ. You can text in 710-710. Whose view of the situation is most accurate? Is it the Seahawks side of this? Is it Russell Wilson and his camp side? We're also going to go to spring training. Is that right? Justice Sheffield? We're going to talk to Mariners starting pitcher. This week, the Mariners, it's our week at spring training. Brought to you by Alaska Airlines. Go ahead, mask up, let's go. We'll talk to Justice Sheffield. That's coming up next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Spring training underway, and from Peoria right now, we have the one and only Justice Sheffield with me on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Justice, what's going on, man? And welcome back to baseball.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad to be back, trust me. It's been a pretty short, kind of long off season, I guess you could say. But I'm excited to be back out in Arizona getting it going again.
I can imagine, and I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off right now. Obviously, about a week ago, you guys had to deal with a whole lot in the clubhouse. How is the clubhouse handling the aftermath of Kevin Mather basically just weighing in on the entire baseball operations and not saying the best of things?
Yeah, I mean, nothing changes around here. You know, we all know what was said, and, you know, we addressed it. We've had team meetings about it, and, you know, nothing changes. Our job is to go out there and compete and, you know, try and get to the playoffs. And everyone understands that. You know, we're just ready to get out there and play baseball and do our job. That's really what it boils down to, and let all that other stuff handle itself.
One of the best things from when we were in Peoria last year, before a whole pandemic and the crazy season that followed afterwards, you guys seemed to be really close, and I can only imagine over the course of last year, you guys were only, what, a weekend series away from potentially getting into the playoffs, where you guys probably got even more close.
Yeah. I feel like towards the end of the year, too, we started playing better baseball. Everyone, you could tell that guys were getting a little bit more comfortable, you know, and, you know, we just kind of coming together as a team. The team chemistry in the locker room, it was always great. And, you know, you could kind of see it unfolding towards the end of the season. So, you know, we laid the foundation last year, so now we just got to build off that.
Justice Sheffield with me on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. You in particular, man, down the stretch, you were dealing, and especially that last month. What clicked then, and how do you keep that going from the end of the season to the beginning of this year?
Honestly, I just think it was just a focus point, focus on in my throwing program, focusing on my bullpen sessions, you know, just really locked in. And, you know, I got in a groove 2 years ago, kind of the same groove where, you know, I got locked and I was locked for a while. And, you know, it just felt like that again last year where, you know, I kind of, you know, got my footing and felt comfortable and, you know, things just started rolling. So, you know, it wasn't anything new that I was feeling. So, it was just one of those things that I knew that I could do and go out there and compete and, you know, get my team a chance to win every time I'm out there. So, looking to build off that, continuing to work on, you know, just, everyday basis, trying to get 1% better every day and, you know, building off that.
Justice, if I were to step in the batter's box, I'm 5'11", like 170 pounds, very unintimidating. How would you approach me at the plate? How would you just get rid of me in three pitches?
You never know. Sometimes the little dudes are the ones you got to worry about.
No, Justice, I'm scared of the baseball. I mean, I played in high school, and I got hit in the head several times by my pitching coach, who I don't think was very good at the batting practice side of things, and it got me to a point where I was just like, nope, I'm out. So, I mean, I think this is going to be pretty easy for you. So I kind of want to know the approach. What's number one? What's number two? And how am I going back to the dugout number three?
Well, if it sounds like you don't like the baseball, you know, in, so I'd have to bust you in, probably the whole AB. You know, probably have to move your feet a little bit, get you a little scared, and then I'll be able to, you know, open up that outer half and paint the outer half. So. But I don't know. I'd have to see some video or something first.
You don't want to see it. It's terrible. But speaking of video, Justice, I saw Ichiro Suzuki's pitching batting practice. How's that been going? I saw Julio Rodriguez was giving him some crap about some of the pitches he was throwing to him.
Yeah. I think Julio took him deep, is what I heard. And then Ichiro didn't like that too much. And he was up there trying to strike him out. So you know how Ichi is. He's out here, you know, he's like a player still. You know, he hasn't lost his youth at all. He's still running around. Great person to be around. You know, it's great to have him out here.
Justice, I know you're from Tennessee, and this is going to be a sticking point because, you know, I worked in Houston for 8 years, and as an obligation, I know you're a Titans fan, and I feel like because you're a Titans fan, I don't know that we can necessarily be friends and stuff because, I mean, Tennessee stole the Oilers away from Houston. So, I mean, what's up with that?
Yeah. You know, I was actually too young. I think when the Oilers were still
around. Oh, sure.
Around. So, yeah, I was, I don't even know if I was around then, but, you know, I love the Titans. I love Nashville. You know, my hometown's only an hour south of there. So, you know, I spent a lot of time in Nashville. My brother went to Vanderbilt. So, there's some ties there, but, yeah, anytime I can get to a game in the off season, you know, I'm trying to get to Nissan Stadium and watch the Titans hopefully make a push next year for the playoffs. But last couple of years have been pretty good. As long as we can get Derrick Henry's ball and keep him going. So hopefully we can get it going next year.
You know, I'm scared of pitchers throwing baseballs, but should I be more scared of Derrick Henry running me over?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm not getting in front of that dude. That guy is massive. I've seen videos of him working out. I've heard Dave had to tell him to get out of the gym because he's too big. And yeah, there's no chance.
Justice Sheffield with me on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Have you ever played football before?
Yeah, I used to. Back in high school, I played.
What position?
I was running back slash quarterback. We kind of ran like a wildcat offense.
Oh, nice.
My freshman year.
Okay.
So, yeah, I played. But, once those baseball letters started coming in, I knew that was my out. So I stuck with baseball.
There you go. I've always been curious how pitchers approach spring training, because it seems like spring training is totally different than the regular season. And I've heard veteran pitchers, I was listening to, I think, John Smoltz this offseason talk about how his approach, Greg Maddux, I'm confusing all these great Braves pitchers. Greg Maddux was talking about how in spring training, they would basically just be trying to work out certain kinks in the throwing styles that they have and maybe trying new things. What is your approach typically in spring training, and how does it differ from the way that you pitch in the regular season?
Yeah, that's a good one because, in the past, honestly, I've been out there just trying to make the team, trying to impress and, live VP or spring training game. It didn't matter. I was out there trying to, give it my all and get those guys out and, trying to open up some eyes. But I feel like this spring training, it's given me a little bit more wiggle room to really step back and focus on really what I need to work on. And like you said, some new things that I can add to my game. So that's been good to, not kind of stress over trying to open any eyes or anything like that, like in years before. So it's been good to work on what I need to work on.
One last question for you, Justice. Everyone's now back in Peoria. You've seen everybody. Maybe some people have been away for a while that you haven't seen in a long time. Who came back looking the most impressive? First impression for 2021?
I'd probably have to say Dunn. He looks really good.
Okay.
He took the off season. He took his nutrition very serious this off season. So he trimmed up a little bit. Looks good in the uniform. Ball's coming out. A lot harder than last year. So, I'm excited to see him go out there and do what he does. And, also killing it. He came in looking like the Hulk. So, and I think he hit two home runs yesterday. So he's legit. So.
That's great to hear. We know he's a little bit fired up. I wonder why going into this regular season. Justice.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, just a little bit. Hey, Justice, we really appreciate you joining us. We're really excited to see you get started pitching this season. So best of luck throughout spring training, and we can't wait to see you back up here in the Pacific Northwest helping this Mariners team take that next step.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to it. I appreciate it.
Big thanks to Justice Sheffield for joining us. And coming up next on Danny and Gallant, spring training coverage, of course, brought to you by Alaska Airlines. Book now, mask up, let's go. There are people that are trying to poach Russell Wilson away from Seattle, and some of them are in positions of extreme power. So our people in positions of extreme power need to stand up and do what's necessary to perhaps also keep Russell Wilson, but bring something back to Seattle that's been long, long overdue. It's Danny and Gallant. Don't go anywhere. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Not going to lie, I was a little bit shook by a tweet that I saw from a very, very thirsty mayor of New Orleans who brought out her best New Orleans umbrella, LaToya Cantrell, saying, I've been hearing a rumor in the streets. I don't know if they're true or not, but Russell Wilson, you want to come to New Orleans? Come on down. Here is the mayor of New Orleans.
I've heard the rumors now, and I want to make sure that you understand that the city of New Orleans is a place for you and your beautiful family. I'm LaToya Cantrell, Mayor of the City of New Orleans, and I know, Mr. Wilson, that you will be a great addition to the New Orleans Saints. And more importantly, I can see us in that number winning that Super Bowl championship once again. And what else I can see? The Mrs. Ciara Wilson herself on that main stage during the historical Essence Festival. Just wanted to stop in to let you know that we not only admire you, we want you. Love you, man. Love Ciara. Love your beautiful family. The culture of the city of New Orleans awaits you.
Drew Brees hasn't even retired yet officially. So,
did you see that Drew Brees released a video of him working out?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
That was sort of a moment where I was like, he might not be done.
Right.
He's done in New Orleans. I wondered about that. I wondered what that. Yeah. First of all, is the New Orleans accent the best accent in America?
Yes.
The Boston accent is the worst. The Boston accent is disgusting. It is horrific.
I guess.
The New Orleans accent. Kentucky also up there. Kentucky, Tennessee areas, I love those accents as well. I mean, there's South Carolina, also an absolutely fantastic accent. But I think New Orleans is the number one, the one of ones, number one overall draft pick for it. Yeah, I don't.
This is tampering, Danny.
I would prefer that mayors consign their activities to stupid, corny bets over postseason games rather than active poaching. I feel that there was a little. Yeah, there's a general. Yeah, tampering's a good word for it. Yeah, you shouldn't be tampering with our quarterback. I didn't care for that much.
I respect her umbrella twirling. I do not respect what she was trying to do. And I thought it was pretty funny to see Mayor Jenny Durkan retweet this by saying, "I love you, Mayor, but keep your eyes off Dangerous Wilson." That's his Twitter handle, Russell Wilson. His home is Seattle. Hashtag Go Hawks. But this is why I liked this retweet even more. And so you know, Seattle is in the market for an NBA team. Don't make me go there. I say go there, Jenny. Go there.
No, do not do that. Don't.
No, come on. You fight fire with fire.
No, I cringed when I saw it. No, man. I don't want to. You don't want to be the person at the bar that's eyeing somebody else's significant other. And like,
but they're eyeing
our
other.
Fighting. Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to claim the moral high ground here. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be that person looking to benefit from someone else's or to break up. I'm not a homewrecker. I am not a homewrecker.
This means war. This means war. And if you want Russ so badly, no, you got to give us that basketball team. I want Zion Williamson in return.
A, not a fair trade, because we're just going to wait here and we're going to get the basketball team regardless. Like, the NBA needs some money. They're going to sell an expansion franchise. Bada bing, bada boom. That's going to happen. The second part is, yeah, having gone through courting someone else's franchise, it stinks. It makes you feel bad about yourself. I look back and I think it did terrible things to this city. The way we coveted the Kings, it was gross, and I still feel uncomfortable about it. We were skeevy. We were absolutely skeevy in the way that we were trying to break up someone else. Think about all the little basketball fans in Sacramento who are going to end up sad about. I know, just because you get your heart broke doesn't mean that you get the right to break someone else's heart like that.
I know, but listen. People of Sacramento, with all due respect.
No, don't do it. I'm telling you.
You're not a real city.
No, see, that's not. No, don't do that.
Oklahoma City isn't a real city either.
No, those are the wrong way to go about it. You demean yourself when you sink down to those levels of they don't deserve a basketball team.
No.
Once their team goes on the open market, then it's fair. I don't want to be part of the breakup.
Fair enough. I can comment.
I didn't like Jenny Durkan saying that.
I
like
loved
my initial
it.
Reaction. I liked her saying, "Keep your eyes off of Russell Wilson." That's fine. The other part, no, don't do that. We're not that. We're not going to sink to their level.
I would 100% sink to their level. What if they don't? What if they don't come? This patience is bogus. I don't want to be patient at all.
But going after another city's team.
Yes, because they can't afford the team.
Is gross.
Oh, no, it's
gross.
Not. No, it's not.
And ultimately, you put yourself in position where you become the person that's leveraged. You get used. Mm-hmm. Seattle got used by Sacramento in a way that we should all feel terrible about ourselves and every little ounce that we put into playing part in that role of getting that team what it wanted from Sacramento. We didn't get a team. And we looked so desperate. We looked so thirsty.
But sometimes along the way, while you're feeling dirty, it's
awful.
Not the worst.
No, no,
you
it's
start
awful.
To get hopeful.
Nope. We ended up going home alone, perhaps slightly overserved, and feeling miserable in the morning about, like, what did we just do? We didn't get anything out of all of that. We just looked like the dirty old man at the bar.
You got to get back on the horse, even if you are the dirty old man at the bar, because tomorrow is another day to steal someone else's team. And I don't think any of you guys should have any problems with it, because someone did it to you. And I do believe in this idea that you might not get the team if you don't take it from somewhere else, or you might have to wait an extra decade for it. And there was some good that came out of it, right? I mean, did the key arena renovations not start, perhaps, or escalate because of this failure in Sacramento?
No.
No,
had nothing to do with it. Okay. No, it was entirely unrelated. Entirely unrelated. All that happened there was that Chris Hansen donated some money to an anti-arena group after he even left, as kind of the final floater that he left in the punch bowl that made everybody in the NBA mad. Oh, it was gross. The whole thing. Soup to nuts. That entire experiment. I would have preferred that Jenny Durkin had sort of stirred the pot back at the Saints and said, by the way, I just saw Drew Brees working out. Are you guys planning on offering him a contract? Like, pick at that scab instead of trying to pick a fight over the NBA.
How about, ain't y'all broke? Can you afford Russ?
See, that's terrible.
Why is
nobody,
it?
Nobody how... likes that guy. Nobody likes the person who references someone else's income.
It doesn't matter if you're the person that's to be liked. They are trying to take something from you. Tell them about their place. Hey,
no.
Best team in the NFL that's blown it 3 years in a row with this quarterback that you supposedly think is a legend that you're just so willing to let walk off without even a ceremonial goodbye.
New Orleans is a great American city. There's no need to besmirch the honor or insult that place's finances when you can just annoy them. Ask them if they're still complaining about the pass interference penalty against the Rams. Do something like that. Don't reference. Don't be elitist.
Why?
Don't be classist.
I'm not talking about the city. I'm talking about their cap situation. They're like $100 million in debt. Come on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Rip on the Saints.
No, I love New Orleans, the city. Because unlike, there's a texter from Oklahoma City who says, hi, we exist. I acknowledge you. I hope that you are a diehard Seahawks fan. I hope that you do not root for the Oklahoma City Thunder. That would be just as dirty as some of the things that we were talking about.
Oh, I hope
here.
That person does root for the Oklahoma City Thunder, and I hope they get sad each and every year when that team ends.
See, how is this any different? How is this?
Down on bended knee. Because that's entirely about the team. It's not related to class, who they are, where they're from, and what they live. Oklahoma City is a perfectly fine city.
No,
there's
it's not.
There's nothing wrong with that city. I just hope that everyone in that city that roots for the Thunder each year suffers misery when that team ends titleless.
It's Danny and Gallant. He's Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant. Danny's back, everybody. And he finally gets to weigh in to sink his teeth into the story that has overtaken this offseason. The dumb and the restless. What does Danny think about this whole mess? You'll hear from him next.